Hey, Startup Hustle listeners, before we get into today's episode, I've got some exciting news to share. If you've enjoyed the insights and stories here at Startup Hustle, you're going to love what we have in store at our brand new podcast called Product Driven. I've always described myself as a product guy first, entrepreneur, software engineer, but really a product guy. I love building products. Many people struggle, though, with how to take a product idea and build a tech product, while software engineers struggle to understand the business side of things and they just don't see the big picture. My new podcast, Product Driven, is about that gap between business and the tech side of building software. It's designed for startup founders, tech leaders, software engineers, and anyone who loves tech and startups. Thank you for being part of this community. Enjoy this episode of Startup Hustle, and please subscribe to Product Driven in your podcast app, and you can also check it out on YouTube. Thank you so much.
And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle, a podcast for entrepreneurs by entrepreneurs. If you want to start, own, or build a business, then you're in the right place. We bring you the real truth about what it's like to take something from concept to launch. From growth, innovation, experience, failing, or winning big, we've got you covered. So let's get down to business with another episode of Startup Hustle, brought to you by Fullscale.io.
What's up, hustlers? Welcome back. This is Andrew Morgans, founder of Marknology, here as today's host of Startup Hustle, covering all things e-com, startups, Amazon. Today, we're going to be talking about the future of freight. So we're getting into all of it. And before I introduce today's guest, today's episode of Startup Hustle is powered by Fullscale.io. Hiring software developers is difficult. Fullscale can help you build a software team quickly and affordably and has the platform to help you manage that team. Visit Fullscale.io to learn more. Today's guest, Daniel Sokolsky, I think I got that right, out of LA, but family from Ukraine, so forgive me for butchering that up, with a company called We Are Warp, hailing out of LA. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, man. Thank you. And I'll just clarify, it's called Warp. We're just Warp. Our domain is wearewarp.com.
Okay, I got the wrong notes. I got the wrong notes here, so forgive me. So We Are Warp is the domain, where to find him, but... more importantly, Warp is the name of the company. So before we jump into like exactly what you do and talking freight and talking business, I like to get to know the founders a little bit and share a little bit of that founder story. How did you get here? How did you get to a point where you're launching this company as far back as you want to go? So I like to take a little time here if you don't mind. And everybody has kind of a unique story and how they became an entrepreneur or a founder. Where did yours get started? Did you go to college and do the college thing? Did you know you want to be a business owner before that? Have you always been in and around freight? Where's your story begin?
Yeah, man. So it can be long, so brace yourself a little bit for the length.
No, we got time.
Yeah, perfect. So basically, look, my parents moved here like a year and a half before I was born. They moved to the U.S. So basically... I was born, they got here, started hustling around whatever they could. My dad was working a lot in taxi. A few years after I was born, he kind of was able to like hustle around a little bit, make himself, make his own way up. And they opened up a courier company in the late 90s. And so basically ever since I can remember, I was somehow involved in courier and, watching my parents launch their business, see kind of like, the trials and tribulations of that, and as a kid. And honestly, man, like when I was a kid, like during the summer times, if I wanted to make money, if I wanted to go out and like get something I couldn't afford, my dad would just, drop me off Smart and Final. But that was like a little mini Costco, basically. And, I'd buy some candies, buy some drinks. I'd walk around with a little cooler with some ice in it and just walk around the park in the summertime, So I kind of learned really early on how to interact with people, how to sell things to people. And dude, I was selling like waters, Gatorades, whatever at the basketball court, basically. Yeah. And, after that, I kind of, I knew that I really always liked to just interact with people and provide a solution for them. It's not really so much for me about like selling a product, right? Like I'm not trying to give you a bottle of water. I'm trying to get you hydrated, kind of similar, regardless if you're from selling water or freight services, right? I don't want you to buy the truck. I'm really trying to solve the logistics problems of your particular business. And so, kind of grew up around that. And then, Neopets was actually the way that I got online, you know, started building websites and stuff like that around that. And, you know, eventually just kind of when I was in high school, just did little tiny businesses, you know, Google AdWords stuff, stuff online, you know, with some ad clicks, eBay, you know, stuff like that. And then I ended up going to college to study math. My mom was like, I got into Berkeley. She's like, all right, you got to study math, you know, so got to go out and you know, get yourself a PhD in math, you know. And basically I got there. And again, like that entrepreneurial instinct came out and I'm thinking, all right, what can we get going on here on campus? And for me, I was like really attached like with the whole concept of like food and, you know, serving people kind of what they want to eat. It's a really easy business to start too. So basically started a food delivery marketplace on the Berkeley campus. I bootstrapped that business. You ran it for about a year and a half. And it was just basically DoorDash, right? Like a lighter version of DoorDash around the campus. They actually started around the same time that we did. So okay. It was kind of friendly competition between us and them. Obviously, they had venture money. You know, they were able to execute a lot more than I was able to. But still, it was a friendly competition.
And in some ways, I do think that in some ways, like if you're new and you're doing something new, it helps to have other people doing it. It's like, as someone that was kind of like trying to create services around building brands on Amazon and working with Amazon sellers, and I was early. So it was like, it was really head against the wall trying to get people to understand what I was doing and the concept. It wasn't just like straightforward. But like whenever some other agencies started coming out or aggregators or competition, basically in my space, it definitely helped propel me forward and help sharpen the offer, you know, so to speak. So I get that. So when was that? Like, give me a time frame. Like,
so this around. Is, I opened up Berkeley Delivers basically 2013. Okay. So 2013, opened up Berkeley Delivers, ran it, kind of like fucked around a little bit for a year and a half, shut it down December 2014. And basically at that time, you know, DoorDash was coming in. They were marketing already in Berkeley. It was just like impossible to make any money at the time.
Yeah.
Also, Bank of America went crazy with overdraft fees and stuff. So it was a bootstrap business, man. It was hard, you know, like definitely was a grind. And then in 2015, opened up a company called AxelHire. And that was kind of like, in my eyes, like an automated dispatch, right? So I didn't have to deal with consumers, didn't have to deal with restaurants and like order food and figure out, you know, how to make a website behind it. But, you know, kind of like the vision behind AxelHire was we would basically do all that back end, right? Like everything from once a shipment is already confirmed, the customer already places an order, we'd basically be able to route it, automatically assign a driver, send the driver the information, they show up and pick it up. And we were all about same day delivery, right? Like hyper fast, hyper local, same day delivery.
Who were you working with at that time? Like what were you delivering?
We were basically in the very, very beginning, we were delivering local diet plans. So it was like, we started up in the Bay Area. So there's a lot of, you know, people basically who are getting like a meal services and diet plans that get delivered to them, you know, every few days and stuff like that. Everything from like vegan, vegetarian, paleo to people who have like some kind of like medical conditions and things like that. And we were basically delivering to those customers.
So you just partner with like a kitchen or like a group that was doing that, maybe like that you had to pick up and you're like, we'll be your delivery service for that.
Exactly. So like at the time we worked with teeny tiny customers. One of them was local, you know, so local had their customers in Marin County. They basically delivered meals to them, you know, three or four times a week. And, you know, we'd approach local and say, hey guys, we can deliver for you. Here's our cost per delivery. We can make sure that it's a certain quality of service. And, you know, we're in business. And, you know, I mean, with SMB, it's a little bit easier to deal with, right? You sit down with the owner, you know, you do a small test, you make sure that you can build trust with each other, you actually deliver on your promise. And then, you know, from there, it's kind of, you know, just continuing getting more and more business from them.
Totally. So
basically did that from 2015 to 2017. And in 2017, like end of 2016, basically, we were lucky enough, we got an opportunity from a big meal kit company, right? We were delivering all these diet plans, we started crawling up into like different produce deliveries, things like that. And in 2017, we were able to start working with meal kit companies. And so this one changed the game for us entirely, because we were now allowed, instead of doing a same day delivery, we did a next day delivery. So we opened up a facility, we'd pick up on a big 53-foot truck from their fulfillment center, bring it back to our facility, sort them and go and deliver from there. So effectively, like we were making like an early UPS or early FedEx, right? Like super simple, take everything to one building, sort all the packages, deliver them from there. And over time, we basically, you know, we succeeded well with them. We got another one on. We got another one. We started getting e-com brands that were looking for faster delivery, lower cost, higher qualities, things like that. And eventually, the AxelHire model became so successful that by 2019, we started scaling it across the country, right? We'd open up a facility there, basically get different customers to go in. We sort those boxes, go and deliver. And man, like on-time delivery was up. We really changed the experience for a lot of these recipients, right? We provided the Amazon like tracking form. We provided like ETAs for when the driver would get there. We made it easier for them to see photo proof of deliveries, figure out where their boxes were at and stuff like that. So we really did like provide an Amazon like delivery experience for like smaller, medium-sized businesses, enterprise also eventually, you know, but people who really weren't able to get that full Amazon advantage.
Yeah, because there's a lot there that maybe like some of our listeners aren't thinking about. For example, like when you're dealing with FedEx or UPS, you know, to file a claim or to get a hold of a driver is impossible. You can't just call a UPS driver and say, where are you? You know, things like that. It's not possible. You know, you're a cog in the wheel. Returns and, you know, at least around food, you know, something sitting on the steps too long, or it's like not delivered on time, right? Let's say they were waiting for it, then they had to leave because it came late, and then now their food's out there and it's ruined. If you've got like returns kill e-commerce, just the margins. So if you have like, you know, you have to keep your return rate or your cancellation, your refund rate below a certain point to be profitable as a business. You know, for me in the warehousing, I have a smaller warehouse here, and I started it simply because working for 10 plus years with bigger brands and the warehouses and fulfillment centers they had to work with at large scale, there was no one there I could call and just get like, you know, get Bill on the phone and be like, Bill, what's going on, and create a relationship with it. You know, it's fill out a ticket. It's join the form. It's, you know, if you weren't a big brand or a big business, you weren't really getting that type of customer care. So there's a lot of value in being able to say, hey, you know, this is a small local business. They care about our work and relationship, and be able to get people on the phone as a business and be able to get that customer service. Maybe that Amazon was the first one to do at scale, right? Where if it wasn't 2 days, you're getting paid, you're getting refunded or discounts or things like that. So I could see why you guys were exploding. Because what people don't see is behind all these small businesses, behind all these businesses, these big, you know, courier services like USPS and FedEx and UPS is a nightmare at times. Not all the time, but can be a nightmare that, you know, ultimately I've seen businesses just change fulfillment centers over and over and over trying to find, you know, good solutions. So I can see why you guys are exploding. That was cool. So you started in the Bay Area. Where was the next couple of cities you went?
So we did West Coast. So it was like LA. We opened up LA. Then about a few months later, we opened up Portland and Seattle at the same time. And then from there, it started becoming like Phoenix, Vegas, you know, and kind of going across the country.
Okay. So it's exploding, really.
I mean, dude, COVID definitely helped. You know what I mean? Like COVID came by and, you know, everyone started ordering online, shopping online. The good thing for us was our technology was in a good place. So like literally COVID hits in 2020. Like we take a couple of weeks to just like figure what the fuck is going on. You know, like SF shut down offices. We all start working from home. We're like, okay, well, let's brace for impact. And then basically once we started kind of getting our stuff together, you know, it like literally the company became a problem with just like opening up more and more and more markets, right? Like customers were getting satisfied, you know, drivers were there because a lot of jobs, you
finding
know,
them work and they get to be remote. They don't have to be around other people to deliver. Exactly. Yeah, I was on the e-com side of it. So, you know, shipping packages out, getting, you know, we were running a warehouse, like definitely like where some people were getting more time alone than they've ever had in their lives. We were like busting ass to keep up. Which is a, you know, a good problem and a bad problem. But when everyone around you is like chilling in a hammock, it was hard. We were busting ass, you know? So, I'm also thinking about like getting into a fulfillment center during the pandemic was next to near impossible. Like if you were a brand not using, so Amazon FBA cut down anything that was non-essential. So if you had non-essential products, you couldn't use Amazon FBA. They were only using it for like foods and toothpaste and toilet paper and things like that. So you had to have a fulfillment center. Like you had to be able to ship from your own fulfillment center or from a third party. And if you weren't already set up in that way, you're shit out of luck. Like you couldn't get into one for maybe 18 months or something like that. So you guys, a new service popping up, giving these people options, freaking awesome. But you're kind of blowing over like one, the technology stack had to be pretty robust to be able to expand and continue to grow that way and be efficient and not create lots of problems. And then two, maybe like, I was thinking about like the leases of getting these warehouse locations to be able to like, you know, take the trucks there and then sort them and then decide where they're going with drivers. That would have been a big undertaking.
Yeah. I mean, it was big, dude. Like the facilities team was going out there touring buildings, meeting, trying to negotiate with landlords, negotiating with agents. It was wild, man. It was like, you know, that movie, Anything Everywhere All at Once. That was literally, you know, exactly what was happening for us at that point. It was just like volume was coming from everywhere. There's drivers, you need to open up facilities. You just got to, you know, we were moving as quickly as we possibly could. Cool. And, you know, and then basically 2021 comes along. And by that point, everyone and their mother basically opened up a last mile delivery company, right? And all of a sudden, you have all these different options available for shippers, all these different ways, discounts. You had like existing providers that grew big, small providers that grew medium, you know. So the market just became like super, super like it. I mean, it didn't become really saturated to like 2022, you know, but like I think like 2021, it was like writing was on the wall that like everybody was going into last mile, right? And everybody was trying to figure out whether it's a drone or a delivery robot or, you know, a person in a delivery van, electric van, you know, gas powered van, it didn't matter, right? And so really, you know, we, you know, I was able to pass the torch off to new leadership at Axelhire back in 2021. And so I spent a lot of time just basically thinking about like, okay, now that there's a bunch of these like last mile options available out there, you know, like what's going on with the middle mile? Because you still have people whose fulfillment centers are like you, right? Like in Missouri or in New Jersey or in Chicago or, you know, Tennessee or whatever state that they may possibly be in. How can they actually use one of these last mile providers if that person can't pick it up from their fulfillment center, right? So they're stuck using FedEx, they're stuck using UPS, they're stuck using the Postal Service because it's basically impossible and it's too expensive for them to go out and get it to a different provider within the region it's supposed to get delivered in. And so, you know, kind of going through this and I realized it's not just expensive, even if they were willing to pay the price for it, they would still lose tracking. Right, because they, you know, you basically have multiple legs made up with multiple different carriers, and you can't get all that visibility. So basically, at first, you know, and I teamed up with my co-founder Troy, who's my co-founder. I had acquired his company basically during my time at Axelhire. So he was doing micro fulfillment. He brought a lot of that like pick and pack experience, understanding like what e-com shippers are looking for, what they exactly want. His company was called Covet Shipping at the time. And he left Axelhire a little bit before me. We started talking about just like kind of like throwing shit on the wall, right? And like figuring out like what do shippers want? Like what's actually like a thing that shippers need right now? And I realized that like everyone, like I mentioned, like everyone was having problems with middle mile, right? Whether it was a last mile carrier having problems with their middle mile, whether it was a shipper that had problems getting things into their fulfillment centers or inventory transfers between, they'd lose the visibility. It was costing them an arm and a leg. And the existing options that were on the table were basically not enough. You know, like you can use an LTL company, but dude, good luck getting tracking from an LTL company. And if you want a guaranteed delivery from an LTL company, good luck with your budget. same thing with parcel, right? Like you can't ship everything via parcel. And we've even seen shippers nowadays that like, because they want to avoid an LTL company so much, they're paying an arm and a leg for a parcel company to deliver it just because the experience is so bad in LTL. And so, you know, as we're talking, we're like, okay, really what needs to be done is like a network, which is similar to an LTL company, but dynamic, flexible, right? Is able to deal with narrow appointment times, pick up appointments, drop off appointments, is able to go out and deal with like different capacities. Because shippers, right? How can a shipper say what their consumer demand is going to be? They can run a marketing, right? They can go out and maybe get listed on a podcast and, you know, hope and pray that their volume gets to a certain amount. But there's no way for them to guarantee that to their vendor. Meanwhile, vendors don't want to buy cars or we're buying cars, you know, for 20, 30, 40% over their price to be able to handle this volume. And they're not trying to misallocate their own resources to specifically serve as that kind of like, you know, uneven demand. And so basically what we realize is like, if you put good enough algorithms in place, similar to what we did at the previous company, but basically if you put good enough algorithms in place, you create a system that's super flexible and keeps everything visible, you can actually help shippers deal with inconsistent like shipping needs. You can help on the capacity side, deal with kind of like unpredictable capacities and unpredictable needs there. And in the meantime, provide everything, the tracking, the transparency that they want at an affordable price point, you know? So literally that's Warp, you know, like what Warp does is we utilize our network of cross docks, straight trucks, cargo vans, 53 footers, both refrigerated and dry, to basically create like a dynamic hub and spoke model that allows us to pick up freight in Texas and deliver it to New Jersey either at a better price than an LTL company or at parity with an LTL company, but at the exact same time have much higher visibility and have much higher kind of like SLAs than you currently get with an LTL company. And we're actually applying this model, not just to less than load, but to full truckload, to air freight, to rail freight, to whatever really that a shipper needs in order to go out and get their freight where it needs to go.
I love that. That's amazing. Almost sounds too good to be true, if I'm being honest.
Yeah.
right. Like, you know, like we've been living in a nightmare of freight and supply chain for the last 3 years as, you know, as an agency running brands, you know, everything you can imagine has been a scenario over the last couple of years in regards to supply chain, whether it's getting stuck out in the dock or getting stuck out in the ports, you know, truckers lying about where they are, waiting for full loads. You know, should be running.
Truckers don't even lie about where they are anymore. Now they lie about who they are. You know, the newest thing is like the trucker identity fraud. That's the craziest stuff too. You know,
I haven't even heard of that. No, I haven't even heard of that. But it's, you know, it's chaos and you're trying, you know, this can be the difference in, you know, at least being in the Midwest, like one of the advantages is like speed to the Amazon, warehouses. So if you're in LA, for example, you're dealing with like every boat coming into the port there. You know, a ton of volume going to those closest Amazon locations. The check-in times are long, and all of that is supply chain, right? Here in the Midwest, at least there's like, it takes a little bit longer to get freight here to the middle of the country. But once you're in the middle of the country, everything moves a lot faster because it's just not congested like it is in, you know, a lot of the port towns. So, you know, all these things, like to anyone listening, like all these little differences matter, like speed and check-in times and, you know, if you're running a small lean team and trying to be efficient, those like arrival windows, you know, like I can't have, if I have a 3-person team, I can't have one of my guys just sitting there, you know, waiting on a truck to show up, all day long, you know, not going to lunch or not doing this or not doing that. You know, just waiting on these windows. So, efficiency being one of those things that's, almost seems like a dream, you know, if it was working like it has, How are you going about, like, you know, I guess building the network in such a short amount of time to be so encompassing, so widely encompassing?
Right now we're focusing on like middle market and enterprise shipper in order to be able to do that. Cause unfortunately, like that's the problem with SMB. You know what I mean? Like SMB, like everybody wants to service them, but everyone is afraid to bear the cost of actually servicing SMBs. Right. And the thing is that our model works very well for medium-sized businesses, large businesses, even some like small shippers who have some good volume in particular areas, right? Like there's coffee roasting companies that we work with right now that are basically like, they just like fucking own LA. You know, like they have like 50 stores, 80 stores, whatever, that are delivering their product in LA. They may not be so heavy in New Mexico. They may not even be that heavy in Central California, but they're dominating in one particular market. That's also enough for us to be really working with. But right now, we basically target shippers who have at least some kind of density so that we're able to grow out a national network as quickly as possible. And we recently also opened up in Canada. So currently, we service US, Canada, and Mexico is coming up this year as well. So we'd be able to kind of pick it up from a fulfillment center in Mexico and drop it off to a last mile provider in Toronto or in Ontario or something else like that.
And there's tracking the entire way?
Tracking the entire way, even if we change carriers. So we may change, like it might be a Mexican carrier that picks it up in Mexico. You switch hands with in a US carrier, then you switch hands to a Canadian carrier. All of the tracking is visible via one tracking link.
Okay, cool. So the tracking number might change multiple times, but you're still able to track it.
Exactly.
Just thinking of it from an Amazon perspective, you know, and a lot of my listeners, they're not all Amazon sellers or Amazon brands by any means. But on the Amazon side, a lot of times you're not able to use like self-fulfilled shipping simply because if you're shipping to Canada or you're shipping to Mexico, you have to be able to track the item the entire way. And being able to upload that into the system is obviously something that is a requirement from Amazon in order to hit your metrics. So, but if you understand North America in regards to like the Amazon network, they have something called NARF, NARF, in North American, you know, something freight, I'm sure. But it essentially takes your inventory that's in Amazon FBA, and allows you to test the Canada and Mexico markets with that inventory already. So they're taking it. Maybe the handling time goes from 2 days to 6 or 7 or 6 to 8 days. That's the difference. but you're able to use your inventory here and ship there. Basically, sellers start testing that market, Canada or Mexico, which have been proven to be very, you know, great opportunities. And then they move their product into, okay, now let's set up actual fulfillment and shipping in Canada and Mexico now that we've kind of tested the market. But then being able to stay efficient, like we've tried so many things through the years where, you know, just shipping through USPS to Canada or shipping, you know, there's different services that have come out that we've tried. And, you know, just shipping from here to Canada, especially during pandemic times and things like that, has just been an absolutely brutal experience. So that's really cool to see you guys expanding.
Yeah. Thank you, man.
And will it be like, you know, Canada native and Mexico native, or shipping from the US to Canada, US to Mexico, et cetera?
All the way through. So basically, like, what we're trying to do is open up these markets and then connect them all with each other. So you can basically, like, you can ship a pallet from Guadalajara, make a stop in, I don't know, Texas and Laredo, Texas, then go up to Chicago, and then boom, end up somehow, you know, in Vancouver or whatever else it may be.
That's so amazing.
Yeah. We're literally trying to do what Amazon is doing with its own shipments and for its own programs, and kind of like give other shippers the capability to use that, right? And I hate to say like, oh, be like Amazon or like Amazon, but like, unfortunately right now, Amazon is the number one logistics company out there. You know, and I'm like, I'm not even talking about the retail side of it. Like, they are the number one logistics company. They can pick up a package and deliver it in so many different ways on the other side of the country or the other side of the world. And they're able to do that bar none right now, you know, and UPS and FedEx. Yeah, they can increase pricing and yeah, they can make some updates and they can do some stuff here and there, but it's not enough, you know? And so a lot of shippers, a lot of retailers, a lot of merchants are now going out their own ways, right? They're figuring out this last mile option, this middle mile option, this first mile option, this way to move freight by ocean or by air or whatever. And all of those options are available to them, but they're just so fragmented. You know what I mean? So like somebody, like you mentioned, who's running a 3-person team or a 5-person team, they don't have enough time in their day for that one shipment
to cross-reference everything,
find out all these things.
Correct.
And so, that's what Warp is able to do, is we're connecting all, it's almost like a network of networks, if you think about it that way, right? We look at everything that's out there, we look at how goods are moving, and we try to figure out the most efficient, and not just the most efficient, but the most effective way to really get it to where it needs to go.
It's so important. I mean, this is where profitability is found, at least in e-commerce, is like, how tight is your supply chain? How tight is your freight? You know, every single part of the process, all the way, then the end mile is paid media, like your advertising or your marketing dollars. And people forget that there's all this, from getting your conversion rate and spending right on content to, you know, having the package arrive not damaged, having it arrive on time, having it arrive in an efficient package, instead of, you know, oversized or because everything is measured by, you know, weight and or dimensional weight, all the way down to who's using it. How long did it take you there? Were you out of stock 10 days? We didn't need to be out of stock. That's how much money, you know, it comes all the way down, to that. And I think one thing about Amazon that I've learned, like, I have been obsessing about Amazon. Like, I'm 25,000 hours on the platform or more. Right. So, I mean, I have obsessed about everything that they've built, everything. Right. And, you just, like, you're spending that much time on something, you're analyzing it, you're thinking. And like, to watch them be able to scale out their last mile delivery services by having people build their own business by saying, hey, you know, get a van, and, you know, they have the service here, at least in Kansas City, where you can work 4 hours a night or whatever, you pick up these 4-hour shifts and deliver packages as a part-time job. And Amazon's not hiring all these trucks. They're not overstaffing. They have a flexible workforce because they're able to try that. Oh, Kansas City is blowing up. Let's go test there. Oh, St. Louis is blowing up. Let's go test there. Let's test what's happening in Chicago. Okay, Chicago is going through a boom, or this warehouse is down. Let's send services over there. So you're right. You're just talking about that. But they also are the massive giant. And one thing that we've learned is that, like, creating a relationship with, let's say, a freight forwarder out of Jersey, for example, is like an actually, like, if I could get a straight trucks from the Jersey port to Kansas City and work with that trucking company regularly and get a relationship, it is worth more to pay more for that relationship and to get dedicated shipping where our truck's not going to sit there for a week somewhere in a parking lot waiting on another load. Or it is worth so much more in profit to be able to pay those higher prices than Amazon's dedicated trucks, to ensure that your stuff gets there and gets checked in on time and is done right. So what I know is that there's a big move in e-com and in the Amazon industry to move away from the cheapest to move to better. And they're willing to do that because it comes down to it. And then also a second thing, part two, is a massive shift to start sourcing product from Latin America and Mexico. So a lot more products getting made and brought out of Mexico, Guadalajara, wherever, up into the US. So people are paying more than going to China, but it's about that speed. It's about the supply chain, things like that. And they're looking to counter for like things that happened in the pandemic. So these big manufacturing conferences, all these kinds of things are starting to happen in Mexico City. Through, you know, colleagues that I have are running these types of things as there's a massive, not exodus from China, but more so a need to just find, you know, alternate solutions. And so being able to get the same freight company, like let's say I've been using Warped and I'm a U.S. company, or I'm, and then now I can go get it to get my LTL freight from Mexico as well and use the same system and network. I think that's, I mean, it's going to be absolutely huge for growth in e-com.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. And also, man, I think that, like, you know, we spend a lot of time talking about e-com because that's like, you know, all everybody is interested in clicking, you know, but brick and mortar is huge too. You know what I mean? Like a lot of brands, like, I encourage a lot of people to go to brick and mortar also. Like people are back in stores, people are back shopping in the stores. And like, there's a huge, massive opportunity to disrupt what's currently happening in the stores. Like, I don't want to see like 50 different yogurt brands on the shelves anymore. You know what I mean? On top of that, like there's these small retailers, like especially here in LA, you think about like Venice Beach, Melrose Avenue, like even Hollywood is even like Onkawinga is having its own like little, you know, final come up, right? Where you have like really small form fat brick and small format, small form factor brick and mortar stores that are now looking at the high end products to get, are looking at the right yogurt, the right butter, even the right, you know, chips or the right like paper towels or some stuff like that. And I think there's a huge opportunity for brands and manufacturers and, you know, big, both small and big alike, to really start rethinking the way they're getting products into physical stores. That's a lot of fun also.
I have some food for thought there because, you know, e-com is my world. That's been my obsession. So obviously I'm coming even with questions and feedback around e-com, but retail is a very big part of that. The best companies are doing, you know, they're in a hybrid model, right? Where they're retail and they're online or all in sync and all that kind of thing. The problem has been for retail, at least the last couple of years, is that whenever I am in the mood to go into a store to shop, let's say I'm leisurely shopping for fashion or something like that, at least here in Kansas City, you know, we have the Plaza, we have a few of these locations for like boutique shopping or things like that, Nordstrom or wherever you're going, right? Here in the Midwest. And, you know, you're there to shop and they don't have the basic sizes, right? They don't have a size 10 or 11 shoe or a medium or large and what I'm looking for. Which used to be like, I need something by this weekend. I'm going to a retail shop to buy it versus purchasing online. That might be the reason I'm going in, or else I have pleasure time. And then I'm going there and they haven't been stocked. They have no product, right? There's nothing more infuriating than like actually going in person, spending your time. If you value your time, you're like, this isn't the most efficient use of my time. I'm doing it because I want to be leisurely or because I need something quickly. And then they don't have basic common sizes. And a lot of that comes down to supply chain. I took a client to dinner on Tuesday night and was talking to the server and I was just making a joke about, you know, like, is there anything on the menu that you guys don't have so I don't get my hopes up? Because it seems to be my luck. I just always pick the item that no one has. And, you know, it's just like the one. You come there for the chicken fingers or whatever and they don't have chicken fingers that day. And you're like, what's going on? And I was just talking to her and she's like, it was something to do with like black peppercorn for one of their main items. And she's like, you know, we don't have any black peppercorn. And she's like, the thing is that we could go to the store and get black peppercorn, for example, go down to Whole Foods. But she's like, our distributor, who's who we buy everything from, doesn't have black peppercorn and they're out and they can't get it. And so, you know, that was just like a little insight on what's actually happening in those brick and mortar locations, where if they're tied and they only have one distributor or one shipper or one, you know, one way to get access, let's say, and that is behind or not working, or they don't have access to it, they're SOL. So what are the other opportunities and ways for people to get access to stuff, you know, in brick and mortar and get stuff from different parts of, you know, one thing about Amazon that I love is I've kind of removed the distributor model in a lot of ways, right? I'm going direct with the brands, direct with local, People think of Amazon as this giant, but they forget that there's all these little brands selling on there, all these small, medium-sized businesses selling on there, and I'm taking them direct. So I'm that middleman that used to take a huge cut of their revenue is now gone because we've helped them be self-sufficient themselves and be able to reach, you know, local Kansas City company is now selling to customers in LA as if they're in Kansas City, you know, through Amazon. So these types of things and being able to not have to rely on whether distributors have the best model, or maybe they've made a contract with this freight company and they're stuck into it. And so you're having to like abide by their rules or their partners, whatever they've got, and really opening that up. So I know that's a little bit, but you know, even from my side, some of the things I've experienced on the retail side that very much are in tune is like, I think there will be this comeback to retail when retail decides, hey, we have to be better to compete, you know, put the better yogurt on the shelf, you know, make sure we have like what we say we're going to have in store, you know, those kinds of things.
Yeah. And I think that time is right now, man. I think the retailers are, you have, especially with like short store shutdowns happening across the board, you have labor shortages across the board. Retailers are trying to figure out ways to make money, to retain the money that they're making. And man, like, I don't know. I love commerce. Like, I don't care. I love omnichannel commerce, right? Like that just me. Yeah. But like, I think that like, the right retailers, the right brands, the right manufacturers can have such a good strategy now. And like 2023 is the year that you have to be omnichannel in my eyes, but like you have to diversify e-com, brick and mortar, get regional, figure out, you know, what are the ghost kitchens or what are the ghost retail that can actually sell your product for you. There's so many options now with an omnichannel retail kind of like experience that like if... As a small business, as a medium-sized business, you need to be there and you need to be hitting the consumer on every single one of those fronts.
I agree. I have a couple more questions for you before we get there. Finding expert software developers doesn't have to be difficult, especially when you visit fullscale.io, where you can build a software team quickly and affordably. Use the Fullscale platform to define your technical needs and then see what available developers, testers, and leaders are ready to join your team. Visit fullscale.io to learn more. Fullscale.io, to all our listeners, is our main sponsor for the show. They help us put all of this out, help us, you know, get promoted on all the areas where we can get more views and be able to do the show for free as well. Fullscale.io, simply browsing the site, seeing like how they've built that site to be able to find, people to join your team, like the interactive characters, being able to see the employees, what they do. It's really freaking cool and worth even just checking out to see how they built that, whether you're looking for software developers or not. So totally check it out. Daniel, a couple questions as we like round out the last 10 minutes here. So I like to end with a couple of questions that just kind of like open it up, I guess, to take it where you want. But the first question being around Warp, what is something you're working on that's not, you know, out yet, I guess, so to speak, or it's not already part of the service, but something you're working on that you are excited about or you or the team are excited about in 2023?
So this year, we're trying to go out and give a lot of our tools out to the different parties that are involved. So we're putting our scanning technologies free of charge into facilities that want to adopt it. We're giving carriers a carrier management system, again, free of charge, so that they're able to go out and make their business use easier. We're giving capabilities to shippers, free of charge, again, so they can scan things outbound, so they get a lot more visibility at the facility level to see what's going on. So we're taking a lot of the technology that we've actually built and we're putting it out there to the market and letting them use it for their own business, right? Even if Warp is not involved in their day-to-day operation, even if we're not currently transporting freight for them, we're putting these pieces into their hands so we can have a better ecosystem in general. Like our big goal right now is like to change the way that freight works in general, right? We think of ourselves on in some cases of freight as a new operating system for freight and for transportation. And we want to put this operating system out there in as many hands as possible. So, you know, that's definitely one of our biggest priorities this year.
I love that. Let's get into that just a little bit more. To anyone listening that owns, maybe they're one of those services that you mentioned. Maybe they're the shipper themselves, maybe they're the brand, maybe they're the business, maybe they're the retail store. Like who is a good fit for, you know, to contact you guys or to learn about Warp or maybe to try to get some of that stuff in their hands to test it. Like, you know, what qualifies, I guess, as being a good partner in that regard?
So the first one that's coming out is anything for the facilities. So it's our cross-dock management capabilities. So basically what that allows facilities to do is to, it's like a inventory management system, like an IMS meets warehouse scanning technology. right? So basically, that's the first one that's getting released. It should enable different facilities, whether it's a brand-owned facility or a third-party facility, like a 3PL or 4PL, whatever it may be, to really be able to have better inventorization of what's inside of their building, to have better receiving capabilities, especially as far as like labeling different pallets, labeling different cartons, whatever that they need to do when they're inbounding freight into their facility, and then being able to outbound that freight by automatically building routes or easily just building which inventory list they need to remove, and then automatically knowing which shelves or which sections in that facility to go to. So this should be available free of charge at the beginning of Q3 for us. And that's kind of like first and foremost, the one that's happening afterwards is on the carrier side. So that's any trucking company, courier company, company with three trucks that wants to put them into a marketplace and start getting work for them. That's what's coming out next for them.
Awesome. Sounds exciting. I'm going to definitely have to stay connected. We're in our third year as a fulfillment center, you know, continuing to grow. And we're using a variety of tools, right? We're having to not hodgepodge, but, you know, definitely have a warehouse management system and an IMS and, you know, a shipping aggregator software and, you know, all these different tools that essentially like, you know, give our customers the best options. Like we do have 5-6 different ways to ship that we're, you know, every so often being like, what is the best way to send out this package? You know, and making sure that we're giving them the best options is something you have to stay on all the time. So that's really cool. And I'm making a mental note, you know, to just check us out here in the Midwest. Maybe we can be a case study for you guys out here or something. But all right, question two, something that you, Daniel, in 2023, non-business related, I guess it could be business related, but just something that you're working on or that you're excited about, you know, this year in your personal life.
Look, man, my personal life, it's a lot of stuff happening. I would say something I'm really excited about. So basically outside of Warp, I've been spending a lot of time around like space and space logistics. And okay. I've been like overall like preparing for launch. But basically, I want to start getting involved in space logistics very soon. I think that's an industry that's coming up here in the next, by 2025, by the time they were setting up the moon landers and things like that up in space. But that's something I'm super excited about. I think that SpaceX has been doing like, it's like a launch every single week, if not more, this whole year. There's a lot of other companies right now that are coming out there. And so far, space logistics has meant sending satellites up to space and deploying satellites and making sure that they're properly positioning themselves and stuff like that. I think in the next year, 2 or 3 years, we're about to be seeing about sending inventory to space, right? So like Ooh. Raw materials to the moon, raw materials up to the space station, so we can actually start building things up there. So I'm really excited to see what happens out there. I think that like logistics and transportation is getting a new frontier for itself. And that, you know, and space is, in this case, the new frontier.
I love that answer. It was not what I expected. It's not something I've heard either on the show. Super original and unique. So super cool. I honestly was like going to have to ask what space logistics was. I'm like, is space a term for something in the industry that I don't know about? You know, is it about like allocating space in a warehouse or something? No, but you're talking about actual space. I think that's freaking awesome. You know, if they ask for volunteers to go to a inhabitable planet, I don't want to go to Mars. I don't want to go to the moon. But, you know, you find something with like some green and blue and I'm probably signing up. Like I'll go there never to return. But you know, that's about where my love is for it. I'll be honest. Like I barely can get through winter. So I don't think I could live in a place that doesn't have like green and blue. I'm an African boy. I grew up in Africa. So just being out in nature is like a must for me to survive. But that's super incredible. And then like lastly, Daniel, people are wanting to follow your story, Warp story, get in contact with you, learn more about what you guys are doing. What's the best place on social or web for them to find you?
Yeah, so online, it's wearewarp.com. That's wearewarp.com. They can go visit us anytime, fill out any of the forms. Our sales team gets back within one business day, so that should be quick. Outside of that, we're pretty active on LinkedIn. So the Warp LinkedIn channel is where we post all of our news. Where we post all of our news, updates, photos of new team members and things like that. And then we're also pretty engaging on Twitter. So follow us on Twitter as well. So I would say across all of those channels, or, you know, if somehow you find my number and want to call me to talk about your logistics problems, I'm more than happy to answer and be a and be your freight therapist for you.
I love it. I love the freight therapist. That's funny. Me and my buddy were talking about just having a business therapist and what that looks like. It's a little bit different than personal, but Daniel, it's been a lot of fun learning about something new today, for sure. For me, I think probably a lot of new for our listeners as well. Thank you for all the value in the time you brought.
Awesome, man. Thank you for yours.
You're welcome. And thanks again to our sponsors who made all this possible, fullscale.io. They have the people and the platform to help you build and manage a team of experts. When you visit fullscale.io, all you need to do is answer a few questions, then let the platform match you up with a fully vetted, highly experienced team of software engineers, testers, and leaders. At Fullscale, they specialize in building long-term teams that work only for you. Learn more when you visit fullscale.io. Thank you, hustlers, for tuning in. We'll see you next time.
Startup Hustle's brought to you by Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. Make sure you reach down and hit that subscribe button, then come find us on Instagram. See you next time. We do it.